You saw The Matrix with me. There's a little movie called The Matrix.
I haven't heard of it. Is it an indie film?
Yeah, it was made by the Wachowski brothers.
I haven't heard of it.
Not related to the Wachowski sisters. Definitely not related.
They're not around
anymore. Not the same people.
Something happened to them. They're no longer here. They released a Dolby Cinema version of it. Mm-hmm. Fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
It really was. Like, just the sound alone, and it looked great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch the other two, whatever they're about.
Yeah, I've never seen the sequels to The Matrix, which I think I said that on our Speed Racer episode.
You did.
You did.
Yeah. Confuses me a little bit.
What, I do, or?
That you saw the first one, where Neo's Superman.
It was like full-on Superman mode.
Yeah, he flies away at the end of the movie, and James, I'm not interested in what's next.
Like, I liked the first Matrix, and then, like, I was in a weird teenage, like, anti-establishment mode by the time the second one came out, and everyone was talking
about
it.
Didn't you hear Rage Against the Machine at the end of the soundtrack? They were definitely in anti-establishment mode.
But everyone was talking about the Matrix sequels I was in this really weird mood where I was like, fuck it, everyone wants to see the Matrix sequel, so I don't want to see the Matrix sequel. And I didn't, but then I kept hearing that they weren't good. So I was like, maybe I just... By the time I mellowed out, I'm like, maybe I won't, but...
I feel if you watch them... The second movie, Reloaded, that was kind of cool. I want to see where they're going next. Mm-hmm. The third movie will drop the ball. You will not be that excited
about
it.
That's what I keep hearing.
There will be cool things in it, but you'll be surprised that that was where it built up to go.
Yeah.
We, for Nerd Club, this month is Keanu Reeves month. So for tomorrow for Kevin's pick, where he's showing The Matrix Reloaded. So I'm finally going to see it. And then in a couple months, we're doing, like, franchises that overstayed their welcome, and he's going to show a third Matrix for that. So I will see both of them eventually.
What's this? Oh, Keanu.
This month is Keanu. Sorry.
Overstayed its welcome. I mean, I think you hold out for
months
The Matrix
after
4.
After the second one.
Or, like, it's not French, but something like franchises that kind of,
what's,
like...
What's your pick?
I'm probably going to show Jason Takes Manhattan.
I would love somebody to pick the second movie of some franchise. Overstayed its welcome. Aliens. But like, it was a good movie. Like, nope, that's where it overstayed it.
But yeah, I'll probably go show a Friday the 13th movie or like maybe a shitty Halloween movie or something. But that's in a couple
I mean,
months.
You could go with Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Yeah.
Because that was the quickest of all those franchises to take a nosedive.
Honestly, if I saw 2, I would never want to
see another
one again.
I'd never
want to see
another one.
2 was the first one I saw, and after that, I'm like, I don't want to see more of these. And then I saw New Nightmare... After that, and I loved A New Nightmare, then I finally saw the first one.
Yeah, I basically vegged out this weekend. I watched All the Dark Crystal.
I haven't watched that.
Age of Resistance on Netflix. Amazing. Absolutely fucking amazing.
I keep hearing that.
Blows my mind. You're seeing the dollar. You're seeing where all the money went in this entire production. Plus, it's good. It amazes me that it's the Incredible Hulk director. Does all these episodes.
Oh, wow.
He also runs Steadicam for, like, almost the entire thing.
Shit.
There's also a nice documentary that follows the series. You get another extra hour and a half to see what they did. And it just blows my mind because they were trying to do an animated series. Mm-hmm. And Netflix came back to them and said, can you do it live action?
Shit.
And they basically said they dropped the phone. And then they showed some test footage where they were doing the Gelflings as CG and the Skeksis as puppets. And they're like, it just didn't look right, so we had to go full puppet.
That's cool, though. It's awesome. Yeah, Lexi and I, we want to start it. We're finishing up. We're watching Glow right now, and then we're going to get into that.
I also finished 13 Reasons Why, third season.
I've heard really mixed things about that show in general.
It just drops the ball so much.
Yeah.
Essentially, without ruining anything, there's a murder mystery this season. Somebody killed the rapist from the other two seasons. And as usual, there's 13 episodes. So the person that it's like The Killing, if you've ever saw the show The Killing.
Every episode ended with, and now this is the new suspect. And then the next episode was like, that's definitely not the suspect.
Actually, they don't even have a tease like that. Oh. It starts in the new episode. Like, oh, I think it's Tony. I'm like... It's episode 4. It's not going to be Tony. they incorporate so many weird things into this one season. There's an abortion. there's a kid whose parents get, his whole family gets deported by ICE.
Jesus.
They're trying to rehabilitate a guy that was abused and was going to be a school shooter, but they stopped that. But mostly, the biggest mistake of this season, or the biggest drop of the ball, because I'm like, they can't keep dropping the ball in the show, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's impossible. They make the serial rapist the nice kid. Like, he's dead, but they keep doing flashbacks, and they're trying to make him sympathetic for some reason. And it just, for 13 hours, why are they doing this? And every character that hated them somehow had to interact with him for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody flat out says, like, oh, yeah, he actually was a great guy. I think the question is, can somebody be rehabilitated that it has done something like this? But by this point in the series, he's already raped 8 people.
Jesus.
How can you feel bad for the yeah, everybody yeah. wanted to, I actually thought it would go, murder on the Orient Express. Like, everybody would be like, fuck yeah, we all killed him.
Dude, you spoiled Murder on the Orient Express for me.
Sorry. Sorry.
Actually, the old one was on Prime. I thought about watching that last night.
I didn't watch the new one at all, but I think it's the same from what I understand.
It is. I haven't seen or read it, so. Yeah. I watched Cronenberg's Dead Ringers.
Spoiler alert. Oh, how did you like that?
I liked it. It was weird and not a happy film. But yeah, I liked it as much as,
I liked it. It was weird and not happy. My type of stuff.
Yeah, I was just like, well, this is a Cronenberg film, so it's not going to be a normal film, but, gynecologists wearing those red outfits when they're performing surgery on people. I'm like, do they really? I don't. But overall, I thought it was.
Do your research.
I didn't. Yeah. So I might be wrong, but yeah, I liked it though. So Jeremy Irons is great in both roles.
I watched Apocalypse Now, the final cut, and honestly, it probably is the best cut of that movie. Because you have the original where it's just cut short to make time, and then you have the Redux where they just put everything in it. They didn't, we have it. We're putting it in the movie. And this felt like there was a director again. They're just like, yeah, this is trying to get some shit out of there that didn't need to be in there in the first place. And it looked great.
Oh, nice.
The packaging's really shitty. I'm going to sound like a nerd, but it might as well have been in a cardboard diaper. But it's nice that you can get every edition on 4K and Blu-ray with digital codes for like $20. You just have casing that looks like maybe there was a slipcase and they ran out of time. You're like, I don't know, just wrap it in plastic. Mm-hmm. These fuckers don't like physical media anymore. Just get it out there. And I think that's all. I think that's everything that I rewatched it.
Oh, nice. I haven't rewatched it.
Because we may
do an episode.
Yeah, we might watch the second one and do an episode. Just seems right. It's like the right thing to do.
I watched a French film that Alex recommended called The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears, and it's...
That sounds like something Alex would recommend.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like a neo... I guess I'd call it a neo-giallo film. The basic plot is like a guy returns to his apartment and it's like locked from the inside, but his wife is missing. And he's trying to find where she is, and he's like going through his apartment building and meeting all the weird people that inhabit his apartment building. And that's the plot, and I use the term plot very loosely because very early on I realized nothing that happens matters. This director just wanted to make a lot of weird, disturbing imagery because like shit will happen, then you find out it didn't happen, and there's flashbacks, I think. Yeah, I had no idea what the fuck was going on in this movie. And I looked it up to Google it, and nobody else knew what the fuck was going on. But there's like really cool images, is pure giallo images, like a killer with black gloves and a knife stalking this apartment building. And there's some really good like suspenseful moments, but really all it is an exercise to do these suspenseful moments and these images without much context. I kept thinking about it for a couple days after.
So it's Drive.
Not really, because I feel like Drive had a narrative and a plot, and this really didn't. There was a moment that I thought was like peak art film, where like there's what I presume is a flashback of like a kid reading through like a porno mag, And he opens up like a page, and there's like a woman, like her legs spread, and he's looking at her vagina in this porno mag. And then later in the film, a character is walking through like a corridor, and a killer comes behind him and stabs him in the back of the head of the knife.
Idiot.
Yeah. And but another character, they're looking for that character, and they open up a closet, and the body falls out, and the camera is zooming in on the knife wound in his head. And I thought, fuck, it's going to look like a vagina, like that flashback. And it looked, yeah, the knife wound looks like a vagina. And I'm like, this is like peak, like art film, like weird vaginal imagery for no reason other than they think it'll make people uncomfortable.
I mean, if you stab somebody in the heart, the head hard enough, it's essentially it's a vagina.
Yeah, I guess.
If you're lonely, that's one way to do it.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a weird movie. But yeah, you know.
What year? Like around when was the time?
Like 2014. It's fairly recent.
Oh,
yeah.
It does sound like something that would be way older.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it sounds like something from the 60s.
I just did like the plot. I just imagined a drunk person saying like, "Ah, this is a great idea for a movie." The apartment or whatever is locked from the inside, and the person's missing, and that like that's it.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, like, because you gotta feel like that. It's a mystery that's tantalizing. Like, okay, they're missing, they haven't left the apartment, but the apartment's locked from the inside. But then it just kind of goes down this weird rabbit hole. But yeah, like I said, there's like a lot of images that stuck with me, and it was like an effective movie, but I ultimately have no idea what the hell happened in it.
It's a good segue, because all of the movies that we're about to discuss this month are about going down weird rabbit holes.
They are we're getting a little dark this month on Cinema d'Amore. I am Chuck Phillips, joined by
James Reinhardt,
Justin Morgan.
If you couldn't tell who we were before that. Yeah, this month we're talking about neo-noirs. And they all get a little weird. Just this might be the most straightforward of them. Well, no, maybe next week might be the most straightforward of all of them. But they all get a little bizarre. But yeah, this week we're talking about Point Blank by John Borman, starring Lee Marvin.
I'd say our most straightforward one is probably the last one that we'll talk about.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you want to go into what neo-noir is? Can you do it?
Oh, God. We had a hard time defining noir the last time we talked about it. I don't know. I guess if you were to say neo-noir, it's almost not even specifically that it tries to evoke the same things as the original film noirs, and in most cases, it flat out turns them upside down or tries to do the exact opposite of like an original film noir to confuse you. And they definitely, especially this one, they definitely embrace more of the dream logic that exists in some film noirs. Like, it feels like most of these film noirs are based on People Saw the Big Sleep, which doesn't make any fucking sense plot-wise, but it looks really cool. Everyone in it's really great. So who cares about the plot? Plot's secondary. It can just be cool visuals and really great style.
For the most part, these movies, too, they're not afraid to assume that the audience is intelligent. They are not afraid to... They're not spoon-feeding you anything. They're like, if you can't fucking follow, then tough. But by the end of most of these movies, they do spell it out for you.
Yeah.
Almost very literally, there's always somebody just spatting what the hell happened.
Yeah.
And this kind of happens in this movie as well.
I feel like neo-noir versus classic noir is like classic noir could only do so much and get away with so much and apply so much because of censors back in the day. But now, because these films are all coming, you know, late 60s up till today, you know, things are less stringent. So they're able to go to the really dark places that noirs couldn't, or that noirs could only really suggest. And that's why they kind of get the, like, I feel like you brought up The Big Sleep. The Big Sleep is kind of that typical archetypical noir where it's this character is investigating something and goes down this weird rabbit hole filled with all these weird characters, and like neo-noirs has kind of turned that up to 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also too, it kind of has that Twilight Zone element to it too, where some of it, the hold to noir can be a lot lighter, that you don't feel like you may be watching a noir for the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm. It feels like it could be a drama, and then maybe the story takes an abrupt turn, and in a moment that you don't expect it to. They play around with tone, like what you know. It's sort of like, what was it, Scream 3, where Jamie Kennedy is saying, like, the roles have changed and you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That is essentially what's happening. Sorry, I'm bringing up Scream 3. That's essentially what's happening with neo-noir, I would say. It's the genre that couldn't be defined very well.
Mm-hmm.
This is just elements of the genre that couldn't be defined very well.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic noirs was like the gray area. This is the gray area inside the gray area.
They almost like noir had such a look and feel to it. And they do kind of give it that time stamp of the Maltese Falcon through Touch of Evil. So by default, like you can get something such as, I'm trying to think super noir, Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
And it's neo noir by default, even if it's following it very, very closely, to closer than most neo-noirs do.
Yeah. Point Blank starts out seeming, I guess that's where you, like, kind of like you said, it starts off, you almost think, it seems more like it's just going to be a heist movie or something like that. Like, it's just going to be an elaborate heist. They're going to steal the money and then maybe they go on the run. And then very quickly, your main character that you're shown to be your protagonist gets shot almost right off the bat on Alcatraz.
Very violently, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely left for dead.
Yeah. And they definitely don't want him to survive.
I did like that fake out at the beginning where he's like, where am I? I'm in a jail cell. So you're assuming that, like, the flashbacks are going to be, like, how he got to a jail cell. And, like, you're assuming he's in jail. He got caught.
Yeah,
and then flashback reveals that they're in Alcatraz, and they just shoot him and leave him in this cell, and that's that.
If you are assuming he's in jail, you are still right.
I mean, he's in jail, but it's not like he was arrested and taken to jail.
Yeah,
and this is they're in Alcatraz and it's abandoned, and he's been he was shot by his cohorts and left there.
Yeah,
I love on a comedic level too. It's not supposed to necessarily be comedic. He takes a couple bullets, and they just, like, he's just like, yeah, I just swam back over to the, don't know if you want to call it the States. I guess it's, Alcatraz is still considered States.
Yeah, he swam back to California.
He had to go over the bay. It just makes me laugh, because he does not look like he would be well enough to swim all the way across that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we can get into later, after we talk about some more of the plot. This is one of the movies that people think maybe it was all a dream. He never did get off Alcatraz. And that's kind of where, like you were saying, he doesn't seem like he should be able to. And immediately, as he's swimming off, it cuts to him being on a boat where there's some sort of tour announcer talking about just how impossible it is to get off of Alcatraz, about how the water's too cold, the tide's too strong, there's almost no way you could get off the island. And he's casually just says, I just swam.
Hey, if Daniel Plainview, or Longview, depending on what version you prefer, can break his leg and days go back to town just dragging himself, I believe that Lee Marvin could swim across that bay with a few bullet holes in him.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of this movie is so stylized, it's so pulpy that I'm like, yeah, okay. But also, I guess this is really jumping ahead, but knowing that this is based off of a book and that this character is a recurring character in a book series, that kind of discounts the, oh, this was all a dream.
Well, yeah. I know that Lee Marvin and John Borman pretty much changed the script because they said they hated it. So this, I guess, bears very little resemblance to the character of the book. They said the only thing they liked about it was the main character. But, like, everything else about it, they said they hated.
Yeah, because I was reading, I guess, because in a book, his character's name is Parker, but also, the author wouldn't let them use his name unless they wanted to make a series of films, and I guess they weren't interested. Yeah.
They did make, my friend Warren pointed out to me after the fact, they made a comic book series called Parker that follows him after this.
I didn't know that. I know there's, because I was reading after, I was doing research for this, they wrote a bunch of books. This book was called The Hunters, and I think this was the first in that series. And then the character of Parker, he's named Walker. But they adapted this book again in the 90s with Mel Gibson in that Payback movie.
Yeah.
And then Parker got like a true adaptation in 2013 of Jason Statham in a film called Parker.
Oh, man, that's considered... I like Payback. I think Payback's pretty good.
I never saw Payback, but...
It's very simple revenge movie. There's really not much to it. He's wronged, and it might as well just be like any other revenge movie.
Yeah, I guess that's also loosely based on the book that this is based on. And then the Parker movie of Jason Statham is based on the 19th book in the series. And I was reading I never saw it, but I was reading the plot line, and it's like, Parker goes out for revenge against people who double-crossed him after pulling a heist. I'm like, is this the plot of every book?
Probably.
Like, you know, I was like, you think he would learn?
Well, this movie is funny because he's very distinctly only cares about his $93,000 he was shorted.
Yeah.
And the point where the villains are like, why $93,000? Like, why not more? And he's like, I just want my $93,000.
He just wants what was taken from him. He doesn't want any more. He's not greedy.
He's probably spent more in trying to obtain his 93. Yeah. He should have some interest.
I feel like that's probably why overall I thought this movie was okay, because Parker has one mode. I'm sorry, Walker. Walker has one mode, which is I want my money. And like, there's nothing else to his character. It's just like that. And like every other character is just kind of the same. They're all just kind of like very flat, and they're just like, they speak in monotones to each other, and that's that. Like, it's,
I do like the style of it though. I kind of like the way the story plays out, even though the character is not one of the more interesting characters. I love that shot where he's like rolling around in bed, and it's his wife that basically left him for the guy that shot him, his partner, and they're rolling in bed. Then it's like him and then the sister. And at one point I thought it was going to be the two men, just like the way that they kept cutting that camera. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And then like the car salesman moment, I thought was like really well thought out, where it's just really funny where he just takes off in that car when he finally gets the guy in the car and starts like beating the shit out of the car. And, he threatens the guy. He beat the fuck out of the guy, threatens him. And then it's just like this weird comedy moment where he can't shut the door. And then the bad guys are like talking about like, oh, well, you know, if he comes around again, he's like, oh, the fuck am I supposed to know if he's coming around again? And he's in the, when they go to the cool dance club, which is the coolest dance club. Let's just call it a club. Not really much of a dance club. A cool screaming club, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
the high note club.
Yeah.
When he goes there and he's realizes that he's possibly being followed, so he's like, I have to go through the back. And you cut to the fucking guy that's like the car salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, ah, he's going through the back. Like, and all the canisters, they knock over all those canisters, and no one's alerted to them at all. Yeah. And I don't know if the woman's just on too much drugs, but she's not fazed by anybody walking up on stage and moving past her.
Well, I'm sure they were on some good drugs.
Well, she,
it's not a weird thing.
He, like, I mean, I guess he could have killed those guys, but it just seemed like he maybe violently beat them up.
Yeah.
And her reaction is way over the top, like, as if it is a murder.
Yeah. She doesn't know how to handle it. But yeah, this movie pretty much right off the bat starts to get, basically from the beginning, starts to really, they really love to jump around with their narrative. I do love the part where they, him and his buddy meet each other at like, looks like a high school reunion or something like that, in like the middle of a gym. Like they're both, like Lee Marvin looks like he's trying to get away from him, and he just slams into him and they both fall to the ground, and like there's people like trying to get past them, like kicking them in the face, like trying to walk over their bodies as they're laying there. They just keep screaming, "You're my only hope."
The minions are funny too. When they do the scene where he tries to murder, what's his friend's name that did him wrong?
Reese.
He violently shoots the bed where Reese was, and then his wife commits suicide, and there's a knock on the door. And I just love how he rips the door open and makes sure to stab the guy on the nails that are on the board.
They're boarding up the door.
Which doesn't even look like, the choreography looks so uncomfortable and random. Mm-hmm. John Wick would have been like way smoother with that shit.
Yeah.
And that guy sucked too. They're like, he's like, you tell me everything you know. And he's like, all right, I'll tell you.
Yeah, the beginning, with all the flashbacks and stuff leading up to the heist, it almost to me felt like a previously on, like on a TV show. Like you're, it's getting you caught up on who these characters are and their relationships before, you know, shit went down, where you find out that Walker, his wife and his friend were, you know, going to do his heist, but his wife and his friend double crossed him because they're having an affair, which is pure noir right there.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to fuck Lee Marvin.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it is, but they do.
On the DVD, yeah. I have the, like the tagline on the front is like, there are two people in this world, his women and his victims, and sometimes you can't tell them apart. And I was like, well, okay, what kind of a movie am I in for here? And yeah, that's pretty much the movie.
I get the noir aspect of it, but it just sounds like some weird abuse.
It definitely yeah. does. Like, it definitely sounds like an early 70s like exploitation film where it's just like, you know, violence against women. And,
I don't think yeah. he really is in this movie, is he? He doesn't really do anything with his ex-girlfriend. She kills herself, and he's, like, upset by it.
He just busts in and tries to, hoping to kill Reese.
I mean, he, like, covers her mouth so she won't scream so he could get in there. I mean, that's the most aggressive he is. And then everything else, every other woman after that, not that there's much. There's the sister, and he seems to have a pretty good relationship with her. So it's not like they're really victims of... Actually, I feel like he's a victim of at least... his original girlfriend. She set him up for murder. And so that tagline doesn't make a lot of sense. That tagline is like, nobody read
it. But yeah, it's just like the old, cause like the DVD cover is just like the old poster.
Maybe that was somebody that read the book. Maybe the book, he's a lot more abusive.
Or it's the tagline that they made up. The studio made up, regardless of whether it's the plot or not.
That's also a good possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that it was cool. It's something, too, that this happens with noir, which we talked about in the last noir movies that we discussed, is that I feel like this movie has been done so many times since that it doesn't really feel too fresh anymore. And maybe at the time, if you saw this in 1976, you would have been like, holy shit, this is really cool. We don't see anything like this at all anymore. Actually, that's about around the time where shit is kind of being... more hyper-violent, the stories are going very left-field. You know, you get Bonnie and Clyde shortly after that, around the same time as that.
Yeah, I think
gotta be close.
This is right around that turning point, I think.
Who's Coming for Dinner? Yeah, it's like the late 60s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything's never going to be the same again.
No.
And this is, I don't know. We almost met Lee Marvin.
What?
Wasn't he at the...
I believe we're thinking of Lee Majors.
Oh, no!
Let's say no. We did, we never got close again. To meeting Lee Marvin.
It was Lee Majors.
What am I? The $6 million man.
We almost met the $6 million man.
This would be a really different movie if Lee Majors was playing the Lee Marvin part.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was trying to do this. There I go again.
But yeah, this is
getting those names mixed up. God.
But yeah, I feel like this is a film that came right about at the right time because it's a 67. And you're having stuff like, you know, Midnight Cowboy and Easy Rider, like Bonnie and Clyde, all these movies that were really pushing the envelope as far as what you could do in film. And then, you know, John Borman burst on the scene of this film, you know, and I like Borman as a director, even though he makes like this and Deliverance, and he goes on and makes what some people consider to be two of the worst films of all time, The Exorcist 2 and Zardoz.
We covered him once on the podcast already.
We did.
Excalibur.
He's a two-timer.
He is, there you go. The second time we're discussing him. I like him as a director, and I feel like his direction in this is very good. I just, like, most of my issues is, like, I feel like the script is very surface level, but at the time I could see why this would cause such a splash for people, because it was probably unlike anything they'd seen before, and it was kind of part of this new wave of film that's happening.
Everything comes off extra cold in this movie, too, where when he, like, murders Reese, like, to get the information of, like, who he was working for, and, like, just throws him over the balcony to his death.
Hey, he fell.
Okay, yeah, he fell. And then...
I mean, he was definitely going to kill him, but I don't think he's going to kill him like that.
There's no... Like, they're totally okay with that answer when he's talking to the sister. Yeah. Like, he just fell. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I love the weird scene that leads up to that of him going into a random two guys' apartment, being like, tie each other up. What? And I'm just like, what's happening? I'm very confused as what's happening. And he's like, he pulls out the phone, dials 911, gets the one guy. The one guy's very calm. Yeah, there's been an accident in our hotel room. Yeah, you better get over here. That's the address. How was that? Good. And then he just hangs up the phone and leaves. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? It takes a while for you to even realize that he's trying to cause some sort of a distraction just across the street, just to get everyone out there.
The meaning to get his money, too, in the, I don't know what that's considered, the sewage system or whatever.
Yeah.
Is also really funny, too, with the sniper.
Yeah. They try to, the next higher up above Reese Carter, everyone just has last names in this film. It's just Reese Carter, Fairfax. They all just have last names. But yeah, when he tries to double cross him by hiring a sniper to kill whoever goes to meet the car salesman guy and take the package from him, and Walker pushes Carter out in front of him, and he tries to get him to stop.
For the time, it has such an awkward feel where he's just like, you go, and the audience knows what's going to happen. Yeah. He just like awkwardly goes out. The scene's like a little bit too long, a little bit too far away. I did dig the other guy running for his life, and it's that really far away shot that is so easy to pull off because you have the blank. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the guy doesn't have to aim worth shit. The actor doesn't have to aim worth shit for that guy to just fall like he was shot like a mile away or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do love.
And he slides so violently down
I like his moment, the sniper, when he goes to meet Carol O'Connor's character at the airport. And it's, I guess that might be the over or underlying theme of this film is that everything's a bureaucracy. You can't get your money. Because then the sniper goes to get his money. And Carol O'Connor tells him, well, who shot Carter? I did. Well, there you go. You shot the guy that was supposed to pay you. Who's going to pay you now?
Not something I would say to a sniper.
No one wants to pay anybody. Everything's all about.
I do like when he's like, I don't have cash.
Yeah,
on
I don't have
me.
Cash on me. Who carries maybe? Cash? I carry $11 on me. Everything's in banks now. You can't. No one carries cash anymore. Which at 1967. Seems very, very modern to be like, what? Nobody carries cash anymore. That's not a thing anyone does.
Say, that's a very like 2019 attitude. Yeah. I think not like a 60s attitude.
That's what I get when people are trying to bum money off me. I'm like, I don't have cash
on
me right now.
On me anymore.
It's a lie, but.
Yeah, I usually don't. Like anytime I'll go to a place and they're like cash only, I'm like, but it's 2019.
You're like, what money laundering business are you into? Yeah. Like,
wait, is this a front for something?
This is definitely a front for something. Yeah. Oh, yeah. God. Or worse, you order your food and then you find out it's a cash only place.
Yeah, that's that.
Yeah. Now you're really stuck.
But we I've been working in a strip district a lot, and I've been trying to get food like at a different place down there every day. And since it's a lot of small businesses, a lot of them are cash only, and I'm like, what the f-? And it's always like that. Like, I'll get my food and it'll be like, oh, it's cash only. I'm like, shit. Now I have to have that awkward, like, I have to run to the ATM. I'll be back.
I'll be back for sure.
I'm not running out.
Here's my ID, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand why they don't just do Square or something and make you take the charge. Like, if you want to do it via credit card, you got to take the charge or something.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. You know.
Then you have a really expensive sandwich, I guess.
The one pizza shop that I go to, like, every week with my friends, like, that used to be a cash-only place. It still is, but they... But now they've like put in an ATM right there, so I'm like, oh, that makes it somewhat
simple. I feel like these places are, well, like you were saying, can't you get Square? I can't go to a bank. Why? Just I can't. I don't want to get involved. If my name pops up on something, it's not going to be good. Probably. Yeah, but yeah, Walker, he's just all about that money. He tries to get it. From everyone he can. Keeps trying to work his way up the ladder. It's almost like a...
He does.
Plays out like a video game. He just keeps going to the next level. Keeps trying to find the guy that's going to actually give him his money. Tries to get Carol O'Connor to pay him. He won't pay him. So he figures out the only place... Everything's just a big circle. The only place that you can possibly get cash these days is if you go back to Alcatraz... And do the exact same thing you did at the beginning of the movie.
There's a funny moment in this, too, where he hits somebody over the head with a glass bottle, and it flashbacks to him hitting somebody else over the head with, like, a glass bottle. To be like, it has to be the same guy. Yeah. There's nobody else that's going to be bashing bottles over top of everyone's heads. The
poor guy's like, no, no, not again.
Oh, God. But, yeah, he goes goes to Alcatraz to try to make make the same drop he did at the beginning. And this time the sniper takes out Carol O'Connor instead. And then we find out the guy that's been leading Lee Marvin the whole time is whichever guy's at the top. I don't know. I can't remember
Fairfax.
His name. Is Fairfax the one at the top?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a random character that could be imaginary through the whole thing. Like, yeah,
that's where I almost question. I'm like, it makes you wonder, like, is it all real? Is Lee Marvin dreaming? Or is it real, but this character of Fairfax is like an imaginary character?
Like, he knows everything. Because
nobody
that
else
happened.
Talks to him. Mm-hmm. Nobody else interacts with him until the very end of the movie. Like, it feels like a very Beautiful Mind thing of like, is he really there? I'm very confused on who this guy is, what his involvement is. He makes it seem like he's a policeman at the beginning.
Yeah, that's what
he's just trying to take down this organization. That's what everyone just calls it, the organization.
That's the name of the organization.
They don't fully explain what the organization does, just that it's bad.
Yeah, because that's how I took it at the beginning. He was a cop, and he was like, oh, yeah, you get your money, and I'll get the organization.
And then in film noir fashion, mm-hmm. you find out that he kind of gets what he wanted, but he was also used.
Yeah.
Which is the main detail of film noir, that his ass got used against his knowledge.
Yeah, to take out all of Fairfax's rivals who were getting ready to get rid of him at some point.
It's a weird way to be used, to be like, I just wanted my money back, and then this jerk here made me kill all these people.
All these people
trust.
That he didn't like. Had to take them all out.
I mean, yeah, that is a very classic film noir. The bits with, like, the organization do kind of remind me, you brought up John Wick. It does kind of remind me of John Wick, where, like, you have this vague criminal underground that you don't really know much about or what it does, but it's, like, always there. And this, like, and, you know, this character is kind of working his way through this underground to get what he wants. It is kind of like John Wick in a sense.
And I think my ties are closer to, maybe because you also brought it up, video games. It is essentially every Grand Theft Auto plot.
Yeah, it is. Maybe you slowly work your way up to the higher levels of the organization.
Yeah, you get more responsibility. You start taking over, and then you end up killing the competition within. There's always that character too that is okay with you killing the bad apples within the organization of evil people. They're like, oh yeah, that guy was a jerk anyway. It's like, you have his position now.
There was you made me think of it when you brought up about hitting someone in the head with a bottle. I also watched The Long Goodbye this week, which is Robert Altman's. It's technically in the book series, it's a sequel to The Big Sleep. It has the same character, Philip Marlowe, but this time played by Elliot Gould. And the movie's almost more or less played as a comedy throughout the film. And then out of nowhere, there's one ridiculously violent part where there's this gangster that's trying to get his money back from Philip Marlowe's friend who ran off to Mexico at the beginning of the film. And he leaves his girlfriend in the car at the bottom of Marlowe's apartment building and tells her to play with the radio or something. Then she comes upstairs and says she's thirsty. And he tells him to grab a Coke out of the fridge. It's like half empty. The gangster finishes drinking it and then just takes it and smashes it on the woman's face, and blood just starts flying everywhere. And he just goes, get her out of here. Get her the fuck out of here. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? It's the only super violent moment in this. And everything else in this film is like a comedy. And then they rush her to, they take her out to the car. Then Marlowe follows them in his car back to the condominium place that they live at. And, the main gangster that hit her in the face gets out of the car and goes inside. And the other two gangsters just get out and stand by the car. And then this girl walks out of the car and starts walking around, just blood streaming off of her face, and almost gets hit by a car. The other guys go, oh, I guess we should take care of her or something. It's the weirdest fucking moment out of that movie. That movie might get even more trippier than this movie does. It's another good one, though, if you like neo-noir.
Why did you choose this movie over any other movie?
I don't know. I think it just... I think its style sticks with me. Like, I like it's, it has... And I guess maybe that's the... That's maybe the biggest weakness of most film noirs is they do often get cited for being a lot of style over substance. Most people's biggest complaint about most film noirs is the same with The Big Sleep. You remember the iconic images from it, but if you ask someone, what's the plot of The Big Sleep, they'd be like, I don't fucking know what the plot of The Big Sleep is.
Also, you double down on this. You're like, more noir, neo-noir, and yeah. Then this is your pick within
and
that.
And then that's the pick going into it, yeah. But out of all the, yeah, out of all the neo-noirs, like, that's what I feel like the biggest thing in this movie is the imagery. They use a lot of, it goes almost against regular, you know, film noir. Has a lot of bright neon colors going into it. Doesn't
do you like movies with a lot of bright colors?
Yeah,
like Last Action Hero. You like exterior elevators, just like Last Action Hero.
I didn't like didn't like Speed Racer though, which had you know that had some exterior elevators and bright colors. That was in the middle there, but yeah,
it's okay to be wrong every once in a while.
That was, I think that was my thought for this is there's something about the plot. Yeah, the plot isn't that interesting. Most of the characters aren't that interesting. But just the weird way that they stylize everything is definitely I feel like you could look at some French New Wave stuff and see it in this film. And being that John Borman's from the UK, he definitely probably was influenced a lot by more of the European cinema. I think it picks up a lot of the weird ideas that no one else was doing at the time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I agree with like the style of this movie, and I feel like that's what appeals to me about neo-noir is that there's a weird surrealist quality to all of them, especially this one. But I feel like for me, like, I love how surreal noirs are, but I also love, like, the characters. Like, to me, film noir is, like, you don't know the plot, but you love these characters, so that's why you're in it, because you're going to meet these weird characters, and you're going to follow this weird detective who has some sort of quirk or dark secret, and you're just going to dive into this world with them. And I guess for me, this had the style, but didn't have the substance for me that I look for in a noir. But yeah, like I see the French New Wave influences in this for sure, and I definitely see how this influenced tons of films even to today, obviously.
And it also makes me think of The Maltese Falcon a lot too, where I feel like it's just such a weird movie because like the character that Bogart plays is not that interesting throughout that entire movie. And Bogart's fine, like he's better in other movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this feels kind of the same thing where, like, I don't feel that Walker is uninteresting, but they don't ever want to go with his it's so closely tied to his personal life without feeling personal, which is probably what your biggest flaw with it is. It's like his friend and partner, well, we won't say necessarily, like, cheated on, like, had an affair with his wife, but took, or it's not his wife, his girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah,
basically took her away from him, and the sister too. Whatever it is his that
wife.
Matters.
It is his wife. No, it says wife. On the gravestone, Lynn Walker.
Yeah, this is
it is his wife.
So, yeah, it seems so personal, and it's never personal to him.
It's all business. He just wants his $93,000.
I mean, if they added something different to the end of the movie that made it more like The Graduate or something, like he got his money, but it really was never about the money.
Yeah.
Except, like, it might never have been about the money for him, but that's not how the movie plays out.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing for me is, like, this dude's a professional thief that pulls jobs of his wife, his best friend, and then they betray him. Like, I feel like that's rife for drama is, like, how does this affect him personally? You know, is the money just a thing he says he wants, but he really just wants, you know, to get her back and get back his friend? But, yeah, we never... I think that's my biggest issue with that is, like, the character of Hunter... Or of Walker, I'm sorry. Like, just seemingly has no personality and really just doesn't care about anything but his money.
Money, money, money.
Which I get it, you know, got to get your money, get what you owed. But, you know, I think that would have made it more interesting for me if there was a human element to it.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is not just style. Obviously, the whole movie has to be stylized because they think that's what's interesting. But clearly, the writer, even John Borman, thought that the reveal that this weirdo guy was like the main guy that Parker was trying to, or Walker was trying to kill, was supposed to be like, oh, holy shit. It might have been at the time.
Yeah.
But me watching it, it's like he's so obscure and weird that, yeah, you're thinking he's an imaginary character. So it's not that surprising when he turns out to be like the big bad guy, I guess.
Yeah.
And that they used him. It's just sort of like the personal element. They could have kept a lot the same and made, like, I don't know, the relationship with him and that other guy a little bit closer. Or at least I think the wife. I don't know. Yeah, like her husband shows back up again. Her lover is gone. And she kills herself. Which it seems like there's more going on that they don't touch on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the organization's the more interesting thing because there's a hierarchy to it, but the movie never wants to tell you what they're necessarily doing. I don't think I think it would have been better if they did go more towards personal and kept the organization very bland. Like, who gives a fuck who the organization is? Also, props to being called the organization. Like, they are just like, that's what we are.
Yeah. Not gonna try to hide under some code name.
We're gonna deal coke. They're like, oh, we're doing everything, so we're just gonna be the organization.
Yeah, and I didn't mind that the organization was vague and mysterious, and because, like, you know, I'm like, all right, this ultimately doesn't matter to the plot. All it matters is, like, he's gonna go through these people to get his money. So I didn't mind that they didn't really go into that.
Yeah, they don't tell you what anything is. They don't tell you they don't tell you why money gets sent to Alcatraz. They just say that's the Alcatraz run. Like I said, drug money. Mm-hmm. Or they don't say what they give the guy in the helicopter that he takes away that they give him the money for. Everything's just left up to stuff.
Yeah, all these helicopters, like that's their mode of transportation, which maybe just feels weirder to us because that they'd be tracking that shit. The aircraft. Yeah.
It'd be drones these days.
Alcatraz is really weird. Oh, so what was your other movie? Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Yeah, that's what I thought of. That's what I thought of. Yeah, I was like,
it was ahead of its time.
Yeah, well, when the helicopter was landing, for some reason, I flashed a Hard Ticket in Hawaii. I'm like, what is it?
You're like, drones. And it was like, you were there. You got sucked away, which is another episode that Chuck chose. Yes. So. He likes airdrops. Look,
I'm into helicopter airdrops.
Well, Fairfax was a decent man, too, because the sniper's like ready to pick up the money, and he's like, leave it.
Yeah, he's like, leave it.
Which would be really fucked up, too, if Walker goes out there to get the money and it's nothing.
Yeah. Mm. They still double-crossed him again.
They did it again. Yeah.
Yeah, he's true to his word, though.
Somebody had to pay him eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of cool shots that influenced many, many, many films to come from this. I wouldn't say it's uninteresting, though. I definitely see the appeal to this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do have to put yourself in the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I put myself right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I see the appeal, and I respect it, but, like, yes, ultimately, I was like, yeah, that was okay. Probably wouldn't watch it again.
That's sad.
Well, I'm sorry that you
feel. Would you remake it?
Would I remake it?
Would you do Payback?
Probably not. I don't know, like... Yeah, because I was reading about the book series and the character of Parker that Walker's based on, and I'm like, it just seems like this guy, like, that's just his thing. He's just like this male power fantasy that's like, oh, I'm going to kill everyone that gets in my way, and it just doesn't sound interesting to me.
But you, as a writer, if you were handed that, you definitely could twist it into make a more interesting character.
But yeah, now you've laid down the gauntlet, and you've pulled that, well, you're a writer. Yeah, like, yeah, I guess I would try to make him, I would try to add some depth to him and make him a little bit interesting.
I mean, if somebody handed me some huge property to write, I would somehow have to make it work, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what property off the top of my head that they're going to do. Justin, we're going to make a dark Blue's Clues movie. I'm like,
All right,
not the movie I was thinking I was going to be handed, but all right, we're going to make it work. We're going to give Blue some hell of a backstory.
I feel like, because I was reading there like 40 of these books, I feel like there has to be something to be mined that I could like use to make the character.
Be one of those ones where, well, this plot point's from the 23rd book,
yeah,
but this character's from the 16th book.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of PR problems with it, too. It's like these Nancy Drew movies that come out. Like, you have enough stuff that you think you can make something different, but somehow they all end up being the exact same thing as everything before. Because I feel like there's just this, you know, brain trust. It's just like, this has to be in it, this has to be in it, this has to be in it. And they're like, well, what about Parker/Walker's family? Like, no, keep that out of it. He's a man's man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, it's not like that character archetype is old or is, you know, us, because there's still tons of books like that, which are fun to read from like escapist point of view of like these manly men who just like do tough things. Like Jack Reacher is another great character, another great example of that type of character. And, you know, sometimes people need that kind of...
Or you can flesh out Reese and give him a reason for what he did besides just money.
Yeah. I think that's what I would do if I did do a new one, is like I'd flesh out his motivation. Actually, you kind of get his motivation because he mentions that he owed people money. And
he had to buy his way back into the organization because he did something. Again, it's kind of vague, but that he did something that hurt the company or something like that before.
All right. Well, let's talk about the wife element. Why is he on top of that? Like, what manipulative shit is it? Is he have feelings for Walker's wife? Or is it just sort of like he's covering himself so when he commits this murder, no one will care that he committed the murder? Or is it like a double fuck you to Parker? Yeah, Parker Walker. Like, not only did I kill you and took your money, but I also took your woman, too.
I think it might just be that. I think it might just be that he was... Because then it seems like as soon as he gets his money and he, like, leaves her and she says, like, they just send me some cash every week. Guy just brings me an envelope full of money. Like, he doesn't... He pretty much leaves her completely high and dry.
Yeah, I think you can expound on this with many, many ways that the movie didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably try to focus on that triangle there, like her, Reese, and Walker, and, you know, their relationship. And
it wasn't a long movie. I'm sure you could have had 10 more minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like an hour and a half?
Probably. It's not a long movie.
Yeah, it didn't seem that long.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I like the sound design for that tease that I did with your last episode with Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
Where it's him walking down the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
And it just gets more and more and more and more and more and more tense as... I don't know if it's, like, mimicking a heartbeat or what the hell it's doing, but, like, the tension is definitely rising with the footsteps that get louder and louder and louder. Like, they're getting closer and closer and closer.
Then it just ends with him kicking in the fucking door.
You don't know shit about this guy, but, like, I feel like something terrible is about to happen when he gets closer to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did like that part.
Yeah. There's a lot of good moments. It's a movie that they could definitely improve upon.
We're taking your favorite movie away from you, and we're like, think about it a little bit, Charles.
Yeah, it happens. Chuck likes it. He likes it. You know, I just...
It's no Speed Racer.
Yeah, I mean, there's few films that are.
That's true. I mean, we're not all going to agree on every movie.
No, but I'd say watch it. My usual watch it.
It is in the book, 1001 Movies to See Before You Die. So there you go.
What if that was the last movie you saw before you died?
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to be. I don't know what I'd want the last movie I see it to be. But
I don't think I would want it to be a noir because, like, your character's just going to get fucked over and you're going to feel fucked over. You're like, I died and that was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about that when we went to see The Matrix. Might have been some fireworks going on outside. But, you know, in today's world, a lot of people, you know, maybe bring guns to movie theaters and shoot the place up. And that's certainly not where you want to die, not during The Matrix. And then we saw a poster for John Cena's new movie outside. And we're like, could be worse. You could have died while watching the new John Cena movie. And then forever, he died at the new John Cena film. And it's just like, No, he's one of those people. And it's like, no.
A week after the Aurora shootings, I saw The Bourne Legacy. That's one of Jeremy Renner.
Not the way you want to go, huh?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was
halfway through,
like,
you're like, oh my God, if I died here and somebody knew that.
Because everyone was scared to go to movie theaters. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to go see a movie to show that they're safe. And I thought during The Bourne Legacy, I was like, man, I hope I don't die watching this movie. Because
statistically, that's more likely to be where you die. But yeah, we were watching The Matrix. I heard pop, pop, pop. And my thought was, the fuck is the theater next to us getting shot up? And it's so nonchalant. That is scary.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh man, am I going to die during The Matrix? Like, that's my thought. And then I'm like, I don't know who would wait to shoot up people that saw The Matrix. Like, that seems very weird.
The Matrix, not even, I was like, it's like you'd think they'd go for like the brand new movie that everyone's seen. I'm like, The Matrix, this theater's half full.
I mean, this person would probably be inspired by The Matrix and wouldn't want to like hurt those people. But anyways, yeah, we were in the lobby.
You see someone come
in
a black trench coat and you're like, oh, he's cosplaying as Neo. Oh no.
Yeah. And it's not a weird, not trying to be jokey per se. It's just kind of that weird. It happens so much, and it's a weird that it's a common thought that has crossed my mind. Because my thought is, the fuck, it's like the Sunday before Labor Day. Why would there be fireworks? You know, I don't know. Especially like around the waterfront. That's the area in Pittsburgh where we saw the movie. And I just feel like.
I heard fireworks here too that day, so
something
from downtown.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily afraid. I would just be more like disappointed, I guess.
Yeah.
In that person. Mm-hmm. So if it ever happens, like that's where my mindset would be. First of all, I'd be like, "Fuck, really, really," and I guess that's the weird responsibility that comes to. Watching a hyper-violent movie with people that maybe aren't capable of stomaching that movie.
It happens.
Yeah.
But you brought it here, Chuck, so just...
I did. I had to bring it back.
You're like, we need 10 more minutes, so I'm going to talk about
it. I'm going to talk about that weird moment. It was a weird moment. You could laugh about it later.
No, I mean, I mean, it's sad to say, but today's atmosphere is a reasonable thing to think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are we going to talk about next week?
Talking about the big one.
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 Chinatown. It's one of my favorite scripts, and I love Mr. Jack Nicholson. I think he's one of the more interesting characters in neo-noir, but they're so many that I could have chosen, and my mindset was like, let's just get this one out of the way first. I don't know if necessarily I would even consider it my favorite of neo-noir at all. Actually, I don't know what it would be. I don't know if I have a favorite. I think there's way too many.
Yeah, this was a hard one for me to pick a movie because there are so many. Like I said, even a couple weeks ago, I was considering changing my pick. But this will be the second time I'll watch Chinatown. And I'm not looking forward to discussing it because of a certain gentleman named Roman Polanski.
Are you going to watch The Two Jakes?
I am, because I got the from the library. I got the version that has both Chinatown and The Two Jakes.
Yeah, I'm going to watch that too. And I think it's going to be interesting too, because I think Polanski is definitely an interesting subject to talk about for sure. Because another layer on top of this movie being well crafted from a writing and acting standpoint. Is you have this director whose name's slapped on the thing, and definitely it's his style, and it's definitely his story that he's curating, you know. But there's a lot more that goes into the movie than the director, too, so it's sort of like you know, it's a weird fucking thing to do. You could love, I don't know, James, I'm trying to think of your downright favorite, like Boris Karloff. You find out he's a pedophile. Where do you go from there? Do you never watch Frankenstein again?
Yeah, that's true. And like, I was just watching Baby Driver the other week, and I'm like, man, Kevin Spacey's so good in this movie, but fuck Kevin Spacey.
Right, and I think that the appropriate response is to just not if that's a thing and that's the moral high ground you're going to make, don't let that person be in another one of your movies ever, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the route that you go, because there's Polanski, unfortunately, is good at his craft, and
I think that's mostly my issue, is like he just made another movie, and like he still is celebrated and people try to like forget, you know, what he did. I think that's most of my issue with Polanski.
We'll go heavy into what he did too. We'll make that a part of it, even though it's not exactly this time, but it's close enough to it. Definitely with the relationship with Jack Nicholson, and there's a lot going on there. So I think it's appropriate to talk about something a little bit more behind the scenes and a little farther than the movie. And I mean, we're not talking about Lee Marvin's life, so. But yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. I think Chinatown's a great movie, and I don't know where we really go from there.
It'll be interesting. This could be an interesting month, I think. We get some fun picks.
Yeah, we're going. I think every movie we did is in a different decade, so we're not staying too close to one particular time period. I know yours is probably the most far out in terms of stretching neo noir into other genres, which we talked about before. You know, they have something more like Blade Runner. You get those sci fi noirs. They could do those. Or something like Dark City, which is very noirish, connecting back to The Matrix, since that was they even took some sets straight from that to do The Matrix. The Matrix, I would say, in a
You're
lot of
obsessed with The Matrix,
man. I was because I rewatched the other two movies last night.
He really wanted to do The Matrix.
I finished the whole trilogy last night, so you know, I'm just still thinking. Look, I watched Point Blank last Wednesday. Matrix is so much more fresher in my mind right now, because I've watched nothing but The Matrix over the past 2 days, so my brain's just right on Matrix.
You know the scene where they land the helicopter in Point Blank? It really reminds me of the helicopter,
the helicopter scene from The Matrix. In The Matrix. Lee Marvin could have stole the helicopter if they could have booted in a program to fly helicopters in 1967.
Oh, he's a man's man. He already knew.
He already knows how to hijack a helicopter if he wanted to.
Yep. All right. We are Cinema de More. Facebook and Twitter. I am at JJMorgan19 on Twitter.
I'm at James Reinhardt.
TruckFin66.
Please rate. Subscribe to us first. Then rate, review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And we hope that you're ready for the... I'm going to say the big one. I think it's the big one. I think it's going to be... it's going to be an interesting episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
'Cause I never drink. Why?